A new year brings a new era for Britain. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 5 decades of economic partnership between the UK and the European Union, 11 months of transition, and several years of political turmoil all came to an end last night as Big Ben struck 11 p.m. here in the UK, midnight in Brussels. Major technicalities surrounding the UK's departure from the economic bloc might be settled, but there are still some wrinkles left to be sorted out for businesses adjusting to life outside the EU. The BBC's Simon Jack has more on that.
Businesses will be strapping themselves in for what even the government admits may be a bumpy initial ride on the new trade deal roller coaster. Although business nerves were calmed by tariff and quota-free access to the UK's largest market, a mountain of new paperwork will be required from today for firms exporting to the EU. The unknown is how ready traders are to complete 220 million additional customs declarations that will need to be completed this year at a cost to UK business estimated at £7 billion. Although the UK is taking a phased approach to checks on goods coming into the UK for the first 6 months, hauliers are reporting that French and German firms are rejecting trips to the UK for fear of getting stuck on the way back. Fears heightened by the COVID-created chaos at ports last week. These will be first and potentially faltering encounters with big changes to a market that accounts for nearly half of UK exports.
Well, the first long-haul trucks have passed through the border controls at the tunnel connecting Britain to France today. And as Simon Jack mentioned there, more rigorous customs checks now apply for the first time in decades, despite a Christmas Eve trade deal that removed tariffs and quotas. The BBC's Vivian Nunes is at the port of Dover, which is the British end of that tunnel. She explains what extra steps businesses need to take now to move goods across the border.
Customs declarations, regulatory checks, things like safety standards, rules of origin checks to see where the different parts of a product were made, food inspections, all these sorts of new standards are going to have to be met.
So are there worries about supply shortages on either side of the border? Because truck drivers are paid not by the hour, but by the kilometer. So if they're worried that they could get stuck or delayed at ports, they may just decide they don't want to come.
We could see added costs here. We could see hauliers who don't want to come from the EU drop off some goods in the UK and then face the regulatory burden coming back into the EU. They might just choose not to do that route anymore. And that will mean people in the UK may see the cost of their goods going up because of those knock-on effects of hauliers taking back an empty truck.
And Vivian, you've been there for a couple of days talking to people on the ground. What's the mood like there?
I did speak to some customs agents. Those are the private companies where businesses on both sides of the channel pay them to sort out their paperwork. And they were very pessimistic indeed. They said there's just not enough trained customs staff who know how to deal with this new burden of paperwork. They were very worried that because of those extra paperwork requirements, they just can't meet the demand and that could mean delays.
The BBC's Vivian Nunes for us at the Port of Dover. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Victoria.
Well, there are not many numbers to check this morning. Major stock markets are closed for the New Year's Day holiday. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow and S&P 500 closed 2020 at all-time highs. Here in the UK, the FTSE 100 saw its worst year since 2008. The calendar now shows a new year, but some of 2020's challenges remain for businesses, as we've been talking. The British cheese industry was hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic early last year when restaurants and non-essential shops suddenly shuttered, cutting off essential revenue streams. Many producers found themselves with a glut of cheese and nowhere to sell it. Andy Swinscoe is co-owner of the Courtyard Dairy in northwest England. He told me how his business pivoted to keep not just his shop, but cheesemakers themselves afloat during the crisis.
Overnight, really, we reckon we lost 85% of business in that first week. So it was kind of how you react to that and try and get those sales back. We already had a mail order offering, but it was about 10% of our business pre-March. And now it's pretty much all the business.
So how do you deal with the really volatile swings in demand, especially from restaurants? Because in this country, there have been abrupt changes to government policy about when restaurants can be open and how quickly they've had to close.
Yeah, I mean, that has been challenging. And one of the things it's highlighted to me is social media is important. We had a restaurant lockdown in November, so all the restaurants were closed. And a lot of our cheesemakers didn't see that coming. So they were making soft cheese as if it was going to be sold in November. And all of a sudden, their market was gone again. And we had thousands upon thousands of little British camemberts called Tumworth. We gave them away if you spent a certain amount on cheese. Social media has been a brilliant tool for us, and using people who support us and believe in the industry to go, hang on, we've got this little problem now. Can you publicize it?
One of the things this pandemic has really shown is how interconnected you are with the cheesemakers and the restaurants themselves. And we've seen so many go out of business. What do you think that means for the future of the British cheese industry as a whole?
I think it's woken us up. I think that we were just selling cheese. And I think that one of the great things it's done is highlight how important your local community is to food. I always think that the best cheese was always getting drained out and sent to the best restaurants in the cities, whereas actually it should be sold to the local consumers around in my area as well. And one of the things we've learned is we need to link up better with our communities, because people are buying commercial block cheeses in big supermarkets as part of their weekly shop, and they could be supporting their local farmhouse cheesemakers. And I think we need to link that link back up. And I think that it's highlighted that that's something we need to build on.
And you mentioned sort of the experience of cheese buying that really lures people in. That has changed a lot this year. We've seen plastic partitions up. You know, you have to meter how many people are coming in. How do you think that'll affect how you do business in the future? Do you think some of those things you'll have to keep for the long term? Do you think we'll ever fully get back to the experience that cheese retailing used to provide?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long time before we get back to how it was. But I think that what we saw in the summer when it opened up a little bit is people were desperate to kind of get out and to taste and to talk about cheese again. And what we've learned in this pandemic is, you know, when we first got hit with that massive downturn in sales, is our style of cheese needs that connection with the person. You know, these are cheeses that don't have marketing budgets. They don't have salesmen on the road. Nobody's ever heard of them. They need you to kind of connect with the person who's buying them and tell them about it. And how we did that, we had to react last March, and we started doing interactive cheese tastings online where people would just order a mixed box of cheese, and we do it around a theme, whether that be modern British cheeses or blue cheeses. And I think that's one of the positives. You've got to take positives out of this, is that we learned these interactive cheese tastings, and I think they will continue post-corona. What we've learned from this year, we can carry on to use that. You know, I will carry on doing virtual cheese tastings to people throughout Britain. A lot of people are putting the barriers up, but then they're also putting the barriers up in their service. And I think that we're still trying to give really great, friendly service. We're still trying to talk about the cheeses. We're still trying to, you know, introduce them to the cheeses. And I think that a lot of the times the barrier goes up and the mask goes on and people's attitude changes. And I think that's really key, is that customer service is to keep that going, you know, with the changes. And I think that that's something we've been able to do in my business, and something I'm really proud of.
There are certainly some silver linings if you look hard enough. Andy Swinsko, the co-founder of The Courtyard Dairy in Northwest England, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of cheese, I've become partial to the very British tradition of a Christmas cheese board. You can see mine this year over on Instagram. I'm at Victoria Craig. And while you're there, tell me your favorite selections. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.